a dim bone, dim bone, dim drive.
Welcome to MRCS on the Move. Bowels, bones, and backseat drivers. I'm your host, Naomi, but this is the podcast where you do the talking. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Bowels, Bones, and Backseat Vivers. Firstly, I'm sorry there's been a bit of a delay since our last episode. I am going to fully blame it on my father, who has been just massively unavailable. So none of the fault is mine, although we have previously had long delays, so maybe I can't deny that. But so as you may have guessed from that, we do have Dr. Tim Dry back in the studio. Or my bedroom, to do our last episode on medical statistics. So I hope you've enjoyed them so far. We've enjoyed doing them. And we are finally going to talk about some bias, which we've been alluding to over quite a few of our last episodes. So welcome back, Dad.
Thank you very much.
How are you? Are you well?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. You're very busy.
Yes,
yeah. Is there anything you want to say about this topic before we go into what we've planned? That is a dangerous question to ask you.
That is
very
lots,
dangerous.
Lots.
Okay, so, well, I wondered whether you wanted to say what you said to me briefly before about the difference between some of the things we've talked about earlier in terms of errors and why bias itself is different and important.
Okay, bias is different and important because without thinking about it and changing things, you don't notice it. So it's a hidden error unless you think very carefully about it. And also it's requires some work to make sure you can reduce it.
Okay, so the title of our topic today is going to be Bias and Study Design. Are you answering the question you thought you were answering? And we're going to try and cover this topic by mainly going through bias, but then talking a little bit at the end about some really important questions you need to ask when you are critically appraising a paper to bring out these errors and bias. So we're going to ask the question first, though. Why do we need to think about this? Why is it important? We'll just crack on, Dad. Tell us why it's important.
Oh, okay, then. Well, for once, I was remembering to wait.
Yeah.
So first, it's useful when you're actually designing your own studies, but then as part of your assessment, you have to do critically appraise other studies, and this is really helpful for when you're trying to critically appraise other studies.
Okay, and that would help us then weight the evidence that we're looking at and know how to use it.
Particularly when you're conducting some meta-analysis, as we discussed before.
Yeah. Okay, so going straight into different types of bias, we're going to look at six different types of bias in total. So starting, listener, what is observer bias to you?
Okay, so observer bias is the way the people administering the process act differently in the way they do things. It might be inter-observer observer bias, which is when that's different observers do things differently, and that might be that they write things down differently. One person might, for example, have difficulty to read handwriting. Another one might use a typewriter. Someone might be recording something in one language and someone might do something in another. So if you're doing international studies, that can be particularly important because various cultural effects can come into how people study things. I've looked at things and worked on other projects in some African context, for example, where what tribe someone was in had quite an effect, and whether the observer was in the same tribe as the participant changed their behavior to somebody else, but that which is something that living in a Western environment you may well not even, it might even come into your mind.
So a good medical example might be if you're doing something to do with MRI scans and you've got two different reporters.
Indeed.
The bias between the different reporters, maybe their level or their experience.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing.
Okay. Level and experience is another one as well.
And then intra-observer bias, is that a different type?
Yeah, that's when you've got bias between different observers rather than the same observer doing things differently.
Ah, okay. Fine. Okay, so next bias is selection bias, maybe one we hear about quite a lot. So what is selection bias?
Okay, so this can have two meanings, really. One is that the process in which participants are selected for a particular trial or study. And the biggest difference is between those where people volunteer to participate, they're in one way or another self-selected, and others where they're invited to participate when you have behaviour, names and contact details on some form of register. So you invite people and then they choose to participate after being invited. It's much more preferable to have some form of register to select from, because selection bias can make a very big distortion and mean that you have much less control of the people you're studying. But then the other element of selection bias is then how well the register, i.e. the list of people you're going to select from, represents the population that you're really interested in. And that becomes an important consideration in the study.
Okay, and is this where randomization comes into? So if you want to know the quality of a selection, or the quality of selection within a study, you can look at the randomization process. And if, does that help?
That's one of the reasons for having a register. If you don't have a register, it's very difficult to randomize anything.
But if you collect patients from a GP practice and then you randomly assign them into different groups,
that's
a computer system that's out of control of the GP.
Yeah, I would discuss that under the next form of bias, prevalence bias.
Okay. And would self-selection come in? You know, if you are offering money or something for people to be part of a study, is that part of selection bias?
If you're offering different motivations to participate, then if all you do is offer the motivation and then allow somebody else to just toddle up, that would be poor. If you're still using a register, invite somebody and then offer them something in order to participate, that's significantly better.
Okay. Is that everything you want to say on selection bias?
For now, yes.
Okay. Okay, next bias is prevalence bias. What is prevalence bias? Far away.
So prevalence bias is where you end up having particular attributes, and it may be ones that are particular to the study. So say you're studying MS, you want to find a treatment for MS, you want to make sure that the people who receive the treatment compared to the people who receive something else like a placebo are similar in both studies. And this is where randomization can particularly help to remove that risk. Once people have volunteered for the study, I manage the selection bias, you then manage the prevalence bias in each of the different groups by randomly allocating them to different elements.
Fine, so I see that now. So you're randomizing from the population that you want to study, you're then randomizing from that, and that reduces things like confounding factors and makes sure everything other than the treatment you're giving is as equal as possible.
And that's where then the process of blinding helps, but I'll talk about that in the next element.
So much signposting here, isn't it? Yes. It's like we planned it for longer than 10 minutes before this episode. Okay, next bias is recall bias, what would that be?
Okay, so I'm going to slightly adjust what we mean by recall bias and broaden it out to talk about what you might call psychological bias. And this is why I was going to talk about double blinding processes. Because recall bias on the face of it is just how people's memory of particular events might change on the face of it. But actually people's psychological influence can also be adjusted by what outcomes they think they are. And just the fact that they're in a trial can change the outcomes and the process. And the fact that someone remembers being looked after can have an influence. So you end up with the placebo effects. In fact, I think the NHS might benefit by just giving out chalk.
You said that in one of our previous episodes.
And what's even more surprising is that even when people know they're receiving a placebo, there's still often found a placebo effect. So this recall bias is really about the psychology of the process and how that can affect you and the way you can try and minimise that and again help with the allocation process is so that if nobody in the process, i.e. the observers, the administrators or the patients, know whether or not they're receiving the treatment, then you've got a better chance that actually the outcome itself is driven by that treatment and the absolute differences between the groups rather than some hidden ones that might be about recall.
Okay. I was just thinking where it might be particularly important to look for this would be in qualitative data rather than quantitative. So say if you've got a questionnaire from a patient or you're looking at symptom scores or
a recall
in the traditional way we might think about it.
So things like pain scores.
Yeah, or if you're going back quite far, it's like a retrospective study. Indeed. And it's quite a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So like pain scores and things. So that might be where that might crop up commonly.
Yes.
Okay.
People will remember extremes more than they remember ordinary stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Then next one, we're flying through these. So number 5, what is information bias?
So information bias is a bit more technical. What the 4 ones we talked about before are really about the people involved in the process. Whereas information bias is much more about the methodology, if you like, and the way that things are being recorded and measured. So it can be about how things are defined, whether they're defined in a way which allows something to be found. It can be also about how things are recorded. It can be about whether some elements are more likely to be missing. A common one in a trial is where you set up a trial and you lose contact with some of the participants in the trial if it's over
1 or 2 years.
Indeed. Then actually certain types of people might be more likely to be lost to follow or not. Those trials where death is an outcome particularly susceptible to that sort of issue, because some people might die just after the prevalence. In fact, I was only discussing the other day about hip joints and knee joints on the National Joint Register, where a well-known innovation, which apparently is called the Birmingham Hip, was shown to have really good data for 10 years. It was based on 10 years worth of data and sold out to a commercial company, made a lot of money, only to find out that after 10 years it dropped off a cliff, its performance. Mm-hmm. So now you really only use the Birmingham Hip, which is apparently very good, but very short-lived compared to other hips. But that was because the data was cut off after a certain amount of time.
Okay, great. So last one, publication bias.
all to do with a very big problem in scientific research at the moment called reproducibility. And this is because, on the whole, publications will only publish positive results. As we've mentioned before, haven't we? You have to have a certain p-value before it will get into the process, which means that actually maybe people might do lots and lots of studies, and then one in 20 of the studies has a positive p-value, so that gets studied, even for a nonsensical answer. So that becomes part of the published element.
Yeah.
But even harder is that it's then quite difficult to get published something that refutes an argument. So the thing that was wrong and has become found to be wrong never gets the refuting of that never gets published. When you have a meta-analysis of all that's happened before, you end up only studying the positive results, which gives an even more reinforcement of the positive, when actually that might not be representative.
Great, cool. So that's all the biases we've gone through. Are there any that you think are really important that we've not talked about?
The thing to be aware of is when you're designing a process, so you might call it design bias, is the way in which you set the whole process up, distorting where you might look and favouring certain areas over others.
Mm.
And we can go back to one of the current things that's been in the literature recently a lot, is the bias towards males' perceptions rather than female perceptions. Only just recently, they developed a crash test dummy that was designed to female proportions rather than male proportions.
Oh, I've heard about that.
Because up until then, every single crash test for all cars was basically done on a male size body.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
And that's led to design changes in seat belts and chair design. Crash, but similar things happen within the medical profession, probably more around the types of diseases and interventions that get studied, and things like studying the menopause and things that probably had a lower level of interest.
I think I had someone particularly talking about this in terms of sports medicine and physiology and stuff, and particularly with the menopause or menstrual cycle, studies around that have been really low, and they actually do a lot of women work off evidence that's done on males, even though actually they're probably completely different physiologically.
Yes,
and that changes through the month as well.
Yeah, interesting. I was to say how you manage the menstrual cycle in a sports situation would be interesting area of study.
Okay, so we've talked about that. We wanted to briefly, just for a few minutes at the end, talk about, I think Dad's got four questions that he thinks are really important to think of when you're critically appraising. So obviously that's how we approach papers a lot of the time, and how we're asked to is to critically appraise a paper. So I'm going to give you the floor to go through the four questions that you think are really important for us to think about with papers.
So the first question is to just ask, what is being measured and how is it being measured, and does that have a capability of answering the question that was originally set? The second question is based around something we haven't really discussed yet, which is whether the outcomes were defined before the experiment was done or after the experiment was done.
I think we have talked about that in one of the previous episodes.
In the discussion of bias.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that, frankly, if you don't define the things beforehand, any estimate of p-values goes out the window. They're not really valid, and there are places now where they're trying to make it a study registered before it's done, because that also helps with the publication bias issue as well. The third question is all about the participants and how they were selected. So by participants, I mean those who are administering, those who are measuring, and the patients. And what way were they selected? And are they representative? And the fourth question is, how aware are the participants of the treatment that's administered and the desired outcomes of the study? Because that
And you think those questions will pick up most?
Yes, I think they're a good place to start as to the things that get forgotten.
Great, thank you. That was a lot shorter than I was expecting. That was a very risky business, just giving you the microphone. Great, okay. Well, I think we've probably touched across the four episodes everything that we wanted to. I've enjoyed it.
Well, everything you might have wanted to.
Yeah, but this would be, you'd have to just create your own podcast, Dad, if you want to keep talking about statistics. I mean, you do a weekly, bi-weekly lunchtime chat or something, don't you?
I have done it at different times. I'm not doing it
Okay. I was going to find you more listeners.
Thank you.
I mean, if anyone ever is interested, I'm sure Dad wouldn't mind talking
to
someone.
Of course, yeah.
Thank you very much. And we will be moving on from statistics in the next episode. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be at the moment, but we will speak to you all again soon. Stay well, and good luck with revision. Okay, bye-bye. Oh, well, a dim bone, dim bone.